Irreverent, entertaining, cool. You're listening to LA Talk Radio.
You're listening to the Dr. Deborah and Therapist Kelly Show, only on LA Talk Radio.
Hello and welcome. I'm Dr. Deborah, and today, no Therapist Kelly, but we have a special fun gal in studio with us, Courtney DeHarsh. Hi, Courtney.
Hi, Dr. Deborah.
But we are going to do a little shout out for Therapist Kelly because she's on a really important interview today. So listeners, please don't be offended that she picked that over y'all, but it was really important to her. So good luck, Kelly.
Good luck, Kelly.
Good luck, Kelly. Woohoo! She's going to do great. She'll tell us all about it next week. So Courtney, I haven't seen you in like 6 months.
That's right.
Oh my gosh. Tell us a little bit about what you do.
Okay, so Dr. Deborah was so kind as to have me here about 6 months ago. I own a women's sober living home, and we talked a little bit about that last time that I was here, and I still am currently doing that and working with young women in recovery from drug and alcohol addiction, amongst many other things. And that's what's going on.
Oh, well, thank you for taking time out of your busy day to be here with me.
Oh, thank you for having me.
I was thinking, you know, we have a great guest today. She's a repeat guest, and I love her. But, you know, the world sometimes isn't very kind to us. And let's just say that there was a traffic jam or somebody couldn't show up, and I'd be sitting in this room all by myself, just talking to myself. I'm like, nah, that ain't going to happen. I'm going to have... So Courtney so generously is here to be a fun sounding board and interact.
Anytime.
Oh, yay. So anybody wants to give us a call during the show, please do so at 323-203-0815. Again, 323-203-0815. And also you can email us anytime at docandtherapist@gmail.com. And I do need to say a shout out for our sponsor, because we have a wonderful sponsor. This segment is sponsored by Kim Gold, author of the business memoir Gold Standard, How to Rock the World and Run an Empire. This book is called A Front Row Seat to a Huge Upheaval, not only in her own life, but in American business, as it comes to grips with the kind of woman who is here to change the game. Leah Remini says, Kim's achievements in business will leave one in awe. That's a given. And Mark Burnett notes that Kim always takes action on her instinct and seems to win time and time again. So please pick up a copy of her book, Gold Standard by Kim Gold, on Amazon.com. So Courtney, you missed, like, this was a really fun show last week. If you get a chance to listen to it, it's really cool. This guy, his name is Marlon Young, and he has an audio book called The Last Dinosaur, An Every Man's Guide to the New Woman. It is so fascinating.
Overdue.
Oh my gosh. It really, like, at first I was listening to the audio and thinking, this is really pissing me off. It almost sounds like he was sort of endorsing the caveman approach with women. And then as it goes on throughout the audio, you can tell that he's making a statement for, well, whatever worked in the past is not working today, and we really need to have a different approach. So I liked how he was actually very sensitive toward the female.
As he should be.
As he should be, yes. Yes. What do you find in the generation of men in your world?
Social media.
Yes, everything
the
social
worst.
Media. The worst.
Oh, yeah. The Instagram, the Facebook, the dating apps. I can't tell you the last time I was just probably approached by somebody on the street or maybe in a restaurant. It's always now through the social media.
That's it, huh?
Like, such just a buzzkill. Yeah.
Oh, it's kind of disappointing too. That's sort of lost that real human interaction.
Yeah. Well, you can't really connect over the phone or over, the internet, and you kind of never know what you're really going to get. And, you know, it sounds good and it looks good. And then, you know, you actually meet in person and you're like, oh, wow, you are not who you said you were. Catfished, that's what it's called.
Oh my gosh, I have one of my slightly older gentleman clients who does a lot of the online dating on Match.com and stuff. And he just went on a recent date. He had had like 4 or 5 conversations with this woman. And he said, oh, Dr. Deborah, this is the one. I mean, I know this is going to be the one. He showed up and he says, I don't know when she had those pictures taken. He does acknowledge being a pretty superficial guy that, you know, how somebody looks is very important to him, and he's right up front about that. But it was, you know, so it's in every generation now. It's just it's the wave of the future.
I was talking to one of my girlfriends about it the other night. I was like, why can't somebody just look at me and be like, you're the one? I always feel like it's the girl wanting to find the one.
The one.
You know, that's the guy. So hopefully this audiobook will change my perception on that. I'll have to listen to it.
And what's the rule of thumb now for, in your eyes, for dating in terms of when you've met somebody online? Like two exchanges via text or three? Or when does it become like, this is just never going to happen?
Well, you know, I'm like a second date. Usually by the end of the second date, I know if, you know, there's a chance for a third, or if, you know, it's not going to go past that. So, but I like to just meet in person.
Right away.
Yeah, because then if you do all the texting before when you meet each other, then it's like, well, now there's nothing left to talk about. So.
Well, that makes sense. Today, we're going to have a pretty good conversation, though, about money and debt and all kinds of stuff. All right. So without further ado, I am going to introduce our guest today, Misty B., movie director, humor writer, and former debtor and under-earner, writes humorous books about life and recovery. Her experiences, combined with her career in entertainment and her dysfunctional upbringing, provide fodder for her gritty, inspiring, recovering stories. She's the author of the book, If You Leave Me, Can I Come With You?, which I had her on for about, I think about 3 or 4 months ago. Fabulous. Meditations for Codependence with a Sense of Humor, and Forgive Us Our Debts, Please, which is the book we're going to highlight today. And then I'm going to read a little bit about her little story that she wrote out for me, which I think is really great. It wasn't the bankruptcy or the DEA showing up at my business partner's office that caught my attention. It wasn't even losing my life savings in a Ponzi scheme, or the fact that the investor of my first film went to prison for securities fraud, for me to realize I had a problem with money. End quote. That's how Misty's story begins. After clearing up her debt by getting into a recovery program for debtors, she decided to chronicle her journey in a book of daily humorous meditations for debtors, compulsive spenders, and under-earners. Welcome, Misty B.
Thank you. Thanks for having me.
Absolutely. So, tell us more about that little story there.
Yeah. I sort of say, you know, it used to be in Glamour magazine, they would have these pictures, glamour do's and glamour don'ts.
Yes.
So when it comes to money, my picture's under money don'ts. I'm not the money dues. So, you know, I, in the classic sense, as, you know, debting is such a big, broad term. But, you know, I was a filmmaker, like a lot of creatives in the Los Angeles area, and, you know, wanted to have, you know, my dreams come true. And one of them was to make a film, which I had had some success as a writer, optioning screenplays and having plays that I'd written be produced. And I had gotten to a point where one of the films, the actress who was funding the film went bankrupt during production. The other one, the producer died right before we were going to in production. Wow. And then the third, the company itself, which was an Oscar-winning production company, ended up getting in trouble and closing down. So my mindset was, wow, I've just got to do this myself. So, you know, damn the torpedoes. I just moved forward and didn't really have a concept about how to handle business or how to manage my finances necessarily. So I ended up getting involved with a friend who had a friend, and this person was a wonderful angel investor who loved to help filmmakers and creatives. And I thought I did my due diligence, but I really didn't. And it ended up that, you know, third week into production, I start getting the notices that, there's no more money coming because he's being investigated for securities fraud.
Oh, my gosh.
And, you know, of course, you know, I'm
the,
at that point,
the angel investor.
Yes, the angel investor. Dear. And he actually ended up going to prison for securities fraud and is in Terminal Island. So maybe that's my next movie. I'll go visit him in Terminal Island. But it's going to be – I don't know if you can really bring your cameras in there. So the point was that, you know what, I had had consistent problems managing my money. And – just like really not having the tools or the desire to really understand and be responsible with my money. I wasn't necessarily a huge debtor. That was a big debt, yes. But my pattern was really more as an under-earner. And under-earning is generally someone who doesn't really value their own skill set, and they work for pay for less than what they're valued at. They do a lot of free stuff, and which we know, Los Angeles being a lot of creatives, there's probably a lot of under-earning going on. But my sort of history trajectory was I would get great jobs, you know, like six-figure jobs, and do really well for the first 6 months. And then what would kick in was something inside me that said, you're a fraud. You can't do this. You don't know what you're doing. And then I'd start sabotaging it. Mm. And I just thought I was insane. And I mean, I probably am, but I'm. But there is a whole.
But very sweetly insane.
I'm a sweet insane.
Very adorable.
But thank you. It's a. I didn't realize it was like an actual problem called debting and under-earning. You mm-hmm. know, that self-sabotage, that whole getting opportunities, but just feeling like you're not valuable enough to follow through. So you create problems and just sabotage things. So mm-hmm. that pattern had occurred over in my life for quite a few years. And it just got to the point where I realized, wow, I've crashed one more time. I went bankrupt, went to the credit counseling places, and it was just not enough. And someone in my life said to me, you need help of a bigger kind. Here's a 12-step group. It's Debtors Anonymous. I don't represent that group. I just want to tell you that. I just am someone who attends those meetings, so I don't, whatever I say is my own opinion.
Sure.
But for me, it really helped me start healing from what is a lot of self-loathing and low self-worth, and how I manifested it and acted it out was in my money and my career.
Mm. Wow. How about your family of origin? How were their relationships to money?
Oh, well, since they were completely insane, they were great with finances. No, you know, I think a lot of that is, it's interesting. I draw these parallels. It's interesting, Courtney, that, you know, you deal with, people in recovery, women in recovery. I find that, you know, my first book, and this isn't a plug, it was just about people that are codependents.
Please plug and your first book.
Are shall you I kidding? Plug my first
what the
book
heck
again?
Are you on the show for?
If you plug leave away. Me, can I come with you?
No, great but that, book. That, so
thank
cute.
You. Thank yes. you. That book was about, you know, codependence and the 12-step program I'm in, which is Al-Anon. But the concept is that for me, I see a lot of that Al-Anon type people are more under-earners because mm-hmm. they tend to caretake a lot and deny their own needs for other people, which is martyrdom. And, you know, but we act that out in their money. And I tend to find that people who, you know, are sober tend to be a little more high rollers. And I talk about in my book how, like, under-earners are not sexy, but, you know, like, sexy is the guy who, you know, spend millions of dollars high-rolling with the rock stars. Like, mine was more like, oh, I wouldn't buy myself a new cup because it was cracked. You know what I mean? Yeah. Not. So to answer that question, in my family of origin, we just, money was such a stressful topic. Mm-hmm. Never. We didn't sit down and, you know, most families don't sit down and the parents tell the kids how to save or how to you know, manage a checkbook. It's not even like that. In my family, it was like, am I just going to get to school today? Is there going to be dinner? It wasn't, are we going to manage our finances? So those kind of tools I just did not grow up with. That's not to justify it, but I really had a huge learning curve. And we were, you know, I think that, you know, I can't. What's the word? I can't. What is the word when you diagnose someone? I can't diagnose my parents.
That is the word.
Well, you're diagnosed. Okay, so I can't diagnose them, but they both struggle definitely with money. Mm-hmm. And a typical thing, which a lot of people who are in debt, they don't answer the mail. Like, they just let the mail
pile up.
My father, classic my father, would never answer the mail. And so he was, you know, he had a job where he was an electrician, so he worked a lot, and then he didn't work, and he worked, and he didn't work. So there was a lot of inconsistency. And whenever the subject of money came up, it was just horrible. And I was usually caught in the middle, you know, asking my dad for my child support check to give to my mother, and then my mother saying it wasn't enough. So total turmoil.
Terrible.
Around money.
Yeah.
So the anxiety for me whenever money was discussed or negotiating a deal, just I would either go in and be like, you know, a ball buster and like, I want this, you know, or, you know, whatever you'll give me is fine. I didn't have a balance. So I had to learn really from the beginning how to look at money and see that it's a relationship. It's a relationship. It's not about the money.
Yeah, our relationship to money is very powerful. Absolutely. Mm-hmm. How we spend, how we save. It's funny because as you're talking about this, I'm thinking of my own childhood and the events that occurred around money. And my father was a bit of a gambler, one could say, when I was younger. So there were times when we would go to Vegas and we weren't really sure that we were going home to a house. You know, we had a house and all that. And he was a very entrepreneurial guy, and he ended up being quite successful. But he was a Holocaust survivor, and, you know, that whole era of, you know, the stuff. So once he acquired some money, man, we were going on the best exotic vacations, and he loved to pull out the wad of cash and show all the stuff. And it terrified me because I was always the one thinking, but we may not have this tomorrow. I'd rather live more subtly. So interestingly, my sister ended up being, she'll spend anybody's money if somebody will give it to her, but she won't spend much of her own. But if somebody wants to offer it to her, she will. We were just laughing about this at brunch the other day. Whereas I'm like, if I make a dollar, I'm going to save $1.10, you know. But then my father, when he was passing this about 5 years ago before he got sick and then ended up passing, he said, you know, don't save so much. He says, I taught you well. I'm glad that you learned that that was something that was important, even though I didn't always do that. But then he learned, you know, because he's quit gambling and went into recovery for that. But he said, because when you get old, you can't spend it anyway. It sucks. Your body doesn't respond. You know, it's like, so I have this pile over here and I can't do anything with it because he's walking in a walker and he can't go, you know, it's all that. So the latter half of the second half of my life, I have vowed to be a bit more generous with myself. Good. And be able to, you know, say, I want that. Okay, so it's a couple $100. I would usually only buy it on sale for half. But you know what? I really want that and I want it now. And that's okay sometimes.
Good.
So that's awesome. And I know, Courtney, you had a little funny story about your grandpa.
I did, yeah. So my mom's father had passed away, and it was right at the time that I was going through one of my more significant breakups. And terrible timing. The money came, the breakup happened, and, you know, right off the bat, I got about $13,000 gone in 3 months because it was, I'm sad, I'm in a shop, or I don't want to be alone, so I'm going to spend money on these tickets to the Laker game and take two friends with me. Or, I mean, it was just, and I ended up in therapy for several reasons. One, of course, you know, breakup, I think, brings out a lot of things to uncover and discover, and we learn a lot about ourselves, and things come up from our childhood and our relationships with our parents, all sorts of things. And, you know, and also the spending was a huge one. I started going to therapy because I was like, I cannot stop spending, and whatever it is that I buy doesn't fill that void anyways, you know? And so now not only do I have anything to show for it, but I still feel like crap. So that actually sort of was, thank God, a short, you know, road to recovery. It wasn't something that I necessarily always had, but I definitely know that when I'm uncomfortable in my own skin, or I'm feeling a little itchy or maybe bored, my first thought is like, oh, I wonder what's on sale, or Amazon Prime's always been good to me. Let's go there, you know? And so it's definitely something that I myself have had to watch out for. I just like to spend in discomfort, you know? So it's like, as soon as I start to feel that discomfort, I got to go, whoa, okay, you know, let's leave the credit cards in the wallet and let's not make really any plans this week because I will just totally overshoot the mark.
It's a common problem. I mean, so many Americans are in debt.
And crazy.
They said, I heard something recently where the average American doesn't even have more than $500 in any kind of a prudent reserve or an emergency plan. And I know so many people in that situation. So many people just cannot manage money. And, you know, some of it is circumstantial, some of it is our economy, but I also, I do believe a lot of it's, for me, spiritual based too. So there is a spiritual economy and then there is the physical economy. And when I am doing things that ground me, like taking care of my numbers, looking at my checking account, because I am like, the joke I make is, you know, whatever happens in vagueness stays in vagueness. And that's how I live my life. You know, right. Vague. Don't open, you know, don't lift the hood unless there's smoke coming out when it comes to money. Because I just did not want to deal with it. There was so much trauma about it. And so now, you know, I find it grounds me to know what I have in my account. I'm not perfect at it. There are days when I don't do it. And there are still times when I don't answer the mail because I'm just like, I can't handle it. But the reality is, when I'm more grounded and I know what's in my account, then I can go after my vision. You know, I can buy myself the things that I want. Because I know what I have, and and then I'm not spending compulsively, and then I'm not denying myself. So it's like finding that balance with money. And it's interesting because, you know, I wrote this book because of my experiences. And then, you know, most people, I'm noticing on Amazon, because, you know, they give you the numbers of where your book is. And this isn't to say my book's so amazing. It's just to look at it. Most people want to buy the books that say 5 ways to get rich, 20 ways to get out of debt fast. Mine is the opposite. It's the long, hard struggle to get out of it, but with a sense of humor and with a spiritual program, and it will last for the rest of your life. But it takes work.
Yes, yes. And
Sorry.
Yeah, and you say in your book that debting is a life and death matter. What do you mean by that?
So I get calls from people that they want to kill themselves because of their debt. Mm. I mean, I literally had a call this last weekend from someone saying, I've given the keys to a friend to my safety deposit box, or my where my storage is, because I don't know if I'm going to get through this. He's living in his car, had a great job, lost everything.
Wow.
People, our culture demands that we are successful. There's so much wrapped around money. And it's not unusual for me to hear that from people, because I am in the program I'm in. People call, because outreach calls. But I know that when I was at my lowest, I thought death was the solution to my problems. I really thought that if I killed myself, I wouldn't have debt. I wouldn't have to worry about debt. I wouldn't have to figure any of this stuff out. It would be the easy way out. And I think many more people think that than acknowledge it. Most people don't admit that they get to a point where financially they're so in deep debt that the only solution is to just, I mean, stories of millionaires that have lost everything that killed themselves. It's
And especially because a lot of the time those who are actually successful at their suicide, they had so much shame around not having what they had, and so much pride in not getting help to do a bankruptcy or something like that. Like that, that's almost like feels worse than death.
Mm-hmm.
When you said about suicide, anytime anybody mentions that, I always feel inclined to say something that someone said to me once, which was really, really profound. Suicide is an interesting question and a terrible answer.
Mm-hmm.
It's very simple because, yes, sometimes we think that way because we need to find some exit. We need to feel that there is some way to exit, but it's a terrible answer. Mm-hmm. So I'm so glad you're still sitting in that chair.
And, me too. Thank you.
Yes, absolutely.
I wanted to bring it up because I think that there are people probably have shame about acknowledging that as well. You know?
Oh, yes.
And that it can bring us to the brink. It's a powerful, money's powerful.
So I know that you're fascinated with humor because
especially after that, right? Comedy is tragedy plus time. Yeah.
Okay. I like it. Yeah. So I just think it'd be really fun to read a couple of excerpts from your book because they're just so much fun. Would you like to read one?
Sure.
How about Freak Out?
Sounds good. Okay. So this is from the book Forgive Us Our Debts, Please. And it is daily humor for debtors, compulsive spenders, and under earners. So this is April 21st, and it's called Freak Out. Someone in Debtors Anonymous once told me that when they were in the throes of fear about money, they would set their alarm and do what they called a 5-minute freak out. They'd spend an entire 5 minutes kicking, screaming, crying, whatever. But at the end of the 5 minutes, they'd have to stop freaking out. They wouldn't allow themselves to think about that problem again for the rest of the day. For the first 3 months in my recovery, I had to set my alarm for a 5-minute freakout every single day. The first time I tried it, I imagined various terrifying scenarios, including homelessness, prison, selling the mercury in my teeth for cash, and donating one of my kidneys to the Russian mafia.
Oh, boy.
I cried, I screamed, I punched my pillows, threw ice cubes at the wall, and I worried as much as I could. But once that alarm rang, I had to move on. I could not think about that subject again until the next day. Are you worried or stressed about something? Set your alarm for 5 minutes and completely obsess about everything related to your debting, spending, or under-earning, or your future. Imagine every possible horrible scenario that could happen and feel as absolutely rotten as you want to. Give it every ounce of energy you have and completely freak out. If you're like me, you'll see how the 5-minute freakout helps release those fears and frees up your energy. More importantly, you'll discover how agonizingly long 5 minutes can be. And so,
yay.
So that was, you know, some of these meditations are tips for people who are trying to figure out their financial solution in a spiritual and humorous. That wasn't as humorous. Some of them are more humorous, but
no, it's. I mean,
I envision the freak out being humorous. If you could watch yourself having the freak out, I'm sure you'd be like, "Oh my gosh!"
Yeah.
I like it because whether you were aware or not, that's actually called a paradoxical intervention.
Ooh.
The only way to change what is to accept what is. So if you're accepting in the moment that you have all of this anxiety and all of this worry about everything, and you just endorse that and allow that to be, then you can make a change.
I love that.
But if you fight it, it's a paradoxical intervention.
Ooh, cool.
Yeah. Okay. Ask somebody to do the very thing that they keep trying to stop doing but can't stop doing. Don't do it. Mm-hmm. You know, I recommend that for breakups. When you're broken up with someone, you get to spend... So you can start out with about a half hour to an hour where you just ruminate, idealize, fantasize about all the things that you thought that this person was for you, which they're not. And then you have to reduce that by 5 minutes every day so that at some point you are no longer allowed to be pining and romanticizing this douchebag who you dumped.
That's awesome. Yeah. I love it. Yeah. Great.
Yeah. Yeah. So, okay. So keep going. Tell us some more things. How did you get out of debt and turn your life around?
Well, for me, it was the spiritual solution of a recovery program, 12-step program, mm-hmm. Called Debtors Anonymous. And what happened was basically I ended up, after losing my last job and breaking up with my boyfriend and losing my car and losing my job, I literally had to stay in my car for a few nights. I had no place to go. I had lost everything. And that's why I say it's life and death. I mean, people get to that brink where they have nothing left. And it's interesting because I was talking to someone the other day and she was like, well, why don't people just get jobs? And it's like this parrot. It's this really strange thing. You know, when you're at that bottom and you feel so completely hopeless, it's really hard to dig yourself out of it.
Absolutely.
And every day, that's why we need other people in our lives and a community. For me, that was the most critical thing, was having a community of people that I could call and go, I'm never going to work again. And they'd go, okay, what are you doing today? And they'd ground me back to, did you take a shower? No. Did you do, you know, the basics of life that we need to do instead of worrying and freaking out and obsessing? So when I started getting help in the group, I really literally had nothing. I mean, I ended up riding the bus, riding my bike. I lived in Garden Grove and I worked in Woodland Hills as a waitress.
Wow.
I taught spin classes in Century City for $10. I mean, I was willing to do what I needed to do, and it was a really rough 3 years for me. 3 years was like that.
Did you get rid of all credit cards?
Yes, I did. The credit card debt I had, honestly, was not from overspending. It was just paying my rent. Mm. So what I did is I got caught in that cycle that a lot of people do when they kind of go. I got hit hard by the recession. I was in the digital media industry, and a lot of those companies started going out of business. Yes. And I started going through my savings. And then, you know, 2009, things hit. I lost half of my IRA in the stock market. And then I started living on that savings and not really thinking that this, just not really planning and kind of ignoring, like what I was saying, living in that vagueness, and ultimately went through everything. And so what ended up happening is I just had to reinvent myself and recognize that things have shifted in our economy. And so this isn't, I'm not a political science major or urban planner, which that's nothing to do with what I'm talking about. But you know what I mean? I'm not a economist. That's
an economist.
A word. And I'm not an economist.
I love urban.
I do. Or I'm not an interior decorator either. But there is a huge shift going on in our economy. And we know in terms of just what's happening, a lot of jobs that used to exist are now crowdsourced. So jobs I used to get, now they're crowdsourced to India or the Philippines or even on Fiverr, 99 Designs.
Sure.
And the reality is I had to reinvent myself. But I couldn't get there until I surrendered the fact that I had terrible fears about money. I had to look at my past. I had to look at what was causing it and then move through it and accept that I had to make some changes myself. It wasn't other people's fault. It was my decisions, my entitlement, my arrogance, my pride, my sense of righteousness.
I know nothing about this.
I know you're both looking
I'm
at
like,
me like,
check,
who's she
check,
talking to?
Check.
Exactly.
Got it.
And
got
we
it.
Had to learn to be a good worker with other people. We know this from program, like worker among workers, and I wasn't. I was either the worst or the best, like no middle ground. Mm-hmm. So finally worked my way out of it and started a business about a year, just under a year ago. And I'm just plodding along and doing what you know, what we do. And learning how to just live one day at a time and not debt and not under earn and to live my dreams.
Well, when you talk about the economy several years back, boy, it was almost like people were encouraged to walk into mm-hmm. a disaster in their lives and people losing houses because yeah. the mortgage, the lenders were basically saying, we'll make you afford this. Don't worry that you can't really afford it. We'll just put the numbers in a certain way on paper so you'll get these loans that you can't afford. I mm-hmm. saw a lot of my actually responsible friends mm-hmm. and relatives lose their homes recently, and it's really sad. So I'm so sorry that you had to go through all that. And in some ways, I'm really glad that you had to go through all that because here you are to share yeah. that wisdom yeah. and knowledge and your own personal experience with our listeners, which is great. If you did just tune in, we are talking to Misty B., the author of her new book, Forgive Us Our Debts, Please. She's also the author of a very humorous book, If You Leave Me, May I Come With You. That was one of my favorites. That's very cute. It's so easy to read, too, because it's basically, you don't have to read even in any big chunks. You could read literally one page a day mm-hmm. and just really let that absorb mm-hmm. and sink in, or you can just go through bunches of them.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's one day at a time, one sort of experience at a time.
Is there 365 of them?
I yes, think, there but are.
There are 365
yes,
of them.
There
just
are.
A couple paragraphs each. Very easy to read.
I even put one in for leap year.
I was just going to ask.
Oh,
there is one.
Yes,
year.
There is.
Like...
There you go. What are the three spending behaviors or mindsets that are definitely going to lead you to the poorhouse?
Ah, good. So one is vagueness, which I brought up earlier. Not really knowing what you have in your account, what you're earning, what you're spending on a really consistent basis, because that leads to just kind of, you know, not reconciling the checkbook. And this was the biggest struggle for me, it really just that terror of numbers and knowing what's going on.
Yes.
So vagueness is really a big one. And then, you know, for me, it's lack of responsibility. A lot of what I hear, I did the same thing that you're saying your friends did. You know, I went in, I was going to flip a house and turn it, makes money during the big, you know, 2000.
Yeah.
Yeah, oh yeah. And ended up having to short sell it. So I can blame the economy. I can blame the lenders. Ultimately, I'm responsible. I signed on the dotted line. I made the decision. So, you know, taking responsibility and being really honest about what my kind of responsibility was
sure.
in the situation. And then, you know, the third... which there are so many more, but you know, I think the third is you know, getting caught up in what other people think you're supposed to have or what you think you're supposed to have.
Keeping up with the Joneses, mm-hmm. right?
The Joneses, yes. So
who are the Joneses?
I don't know. I've never even met anybody with the last name Jones, honestly. But it's
I know,
you know
someone with the last name Jones. I wouldn't want to keep up
with them.
But it's also our culture, you know, that we see all this. You know, there's the whole family, you know, and I know with the big girls, and it's all about,
that
it's
was
all
very
about,
gentle.
It was all about, you know, getting what you're supposed to get and just that entitlement that just keeping up with what other people have. The reality is we don't, you know, they did a study and they said once a person hits like $75,000 a year in the United States, there's really not that much greater level of happiness between 75,000 and 300,000.
Interesting. I actually heard 40,000. Did they change that due to inflation?
I probably just made the 75,000.
Oh,
sounds like a number.
Because we're in LA. Come on.
Yeah, that's right.
Well, I read an article. Gosh, this was probably recent, maybe a month or two ago. And the article did say that to basically just be able to survive, you know, and have a mediocre life in LA, you have to make at least $35 an hour.
Really?
Mm-hmm. Which, how much is that per year?
Well, it depends. It's probably about $1,400 a week then.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, if you're working 40 hours a week, something in that ballpark.
Yeah.
So per year, $60,000?
Yeah.
I don't know if I just did my math correct.
Well,
I wouldn't
right,
know.
So we'll
I'm not good
because yeah. I don't know.
Right, and I'm not good with numbers. So,
60,000, something like that. Yeah. But it is fascinating. And oh, there's so many super wealthy people out there who are just miserable. They're all miserable and just, you know, chasing that dream, but they don't even have, as you say, the vagueness. They don't even have a defined dream or any practical steps about how to get there. And a lot of people just believe that just because they have a dream, the world should just provide it for them without doing any of the work.
Right. You know, and that's sort of, this is a little controversial because there's a lot of people that are into, you know, the law of attraction. And if you want something, you just ask for it. And if you believe it and you have the right vibes. And, you know, for me, that did not work at all. Because I'll tell you why. I am the kind of person that, for whatever reason, I'm on this planet, it's not to just get stuff. It's actually to give stuff. So when I'm constantly in my own will about it, like, I'm going to get this, I'm going to, this is what I want, and it's me focused. And that, for me, is the killer. You know, like, when it's all about me and what I can get out of a situation, I'm a nightmare. You know, when I'm in service and when I'm thinking, like, what can I do for other people? How can I be a better human being and serve my higher purpose? It changes things. And for me, that whole genre of thought, that philosophy of thought, that is, I'm going to get mine, doesn't work. So for me, there's a big spiritual component to this. And I think when we forget that about our money and how we earn and what we're here to do, it changes things. And not necessarily for me in the best way.
It's interesting. Somewhere in my, I think it was in my 20s, I had this epiphany as I was making a wish in a fountain with a penny. And I said, I was about to wish for something for myself. And I said, I'm going to wish something for someone else. And then I, every time I did that, I said, I'm going to wish for somebody else. And so I just started this ritual with myself that I will never make a wish for myself, but always about someone else. Oh. I don't know if that, any of them have ever come true, but it felt nice.
That's really great. I love that.
It felt nice. Yeah. So, and that's right in sync with what you're saying. Yeah, I think we get so much more from giving energy to others in ways, as long as we're not depleting ourselves to the point where we can't survive.
Yes. Which that's the other side of this coin, the under-earning, you know, where we don't value ourselves enough so that we're kind of allowing that to be the reason why we don't move ahead in life because we don't think we're worthy and we're constantly... So that was a part of what I did as well. You know, I didn't feel like I deserved to have things, so I would give things away. I remember having, like, people, you know how people give you just gifts for birthdays or whatever? I remember looking at stacks of gifts that I had been given, and I'd never opened them because I was just going to give them to someone else. And it's like there is, you know, the vacuum theory. Like, if you don't give something back, there's no space for you to get more, you know, in a healthy way. And so I was kind of hoarding the little things that I did have, and it led to a really small life. And then when I started going, oh, I can give it back and I can give it to myself, life started getting bigger.
That balance is so important. Absolutely. Yeah, good stuff. Good stuff. I know there's another one I want you to read out of your book.
Okay.
Are you willing?
Yes.
The Horrible Bosses.
Okay.
This is on page 315.
Okay. I had it tagged.
Oh, here. I got it.
Oh.
Okay.
Okay. So this is November 4th excerpt from the book. It's called Horrible Bosses. It took me a few years in recovery before I came to the conclusion that I didn't have to do business with mean people who lied to me. Like many debtors, I thought I had to take any job to show I was willing to earn, even if it meant working for unkind, unethical people. And every time I did so, it ended badly. I'd take jobs with horrible bosses and promise to keep my mouth shut, but it was impossible because I thought I knew a lot and I had a big mouth. So I'd monitor myself for a while, and I'd put up with way too much, until one day, out of the blue, I'd flip out and tell said unkind, horrible bosses exactly what I thought of them. After a few years in recovery and a few more of those experiences, I said the following prayer. Hey, God, can you help me out here? I mean, I know I'm not perfect and I have a tendency to be a total know-it-all, but I don't want to do business anymore with unethical people. I think I'd rather work with decent, thoughtful people. Thanks. Then I went on with my day, my jobless day. I haven't given it a whole lot of thought until right now, when I realized that I haven't worked for a lying, horrible boss in a very long time. One might say this reflects something about me. Maybe I've changed and become a better employee. I suppose that could be true, as I have been known to do some thoughtless things in the past, but I've never been called unethical or mean-spirited, because mean people suck. And even though I've said before I despise the word suck, it's the only word that really makes my point here.
Very nice. Yay. Also inspires me to some memories of my I know Courtney and I both know a said human being that still exists on the planet in making lots and lots of money at other people's expense.
Oh, I want to know who it is.
Maybe after the show.
Oh, I'm sticking around.
Someone in the helping profession, so he says. Anyway, but it did remind me of a situation that was a really good learning lesson for me, too. And kind of similar to what you're talking about, where I worked for this psychiatrist at an eating disorder program. And the guy was, just one of those really smooth-talking guys. And, you know, he seemed to take a really big liking to me and my work and stuff. And he wanted me to be sort of his psychologist assistant. So I wasn't really, kind of like, I would show up on his behalf and do rounds in the hospital. We'd have lots and lots of patients, and I would sit with them each for like 10 or 15 minutes. And he'd be the medical director, but I would be doing most of the work, right? And seeing them and doing the charting and things like that. But he was offering to pay me a very sizable chunk of money in the percentage that he was going to gain from these patients, right? So I, of course, being naive at the time, thought that this was going to be legitimate. I had no idea that this was not going to be a legitimate practice, that every word that he was saying to me was bullshit, so to speak. Wow. And he was just going to be billing these patients and collecting all this money, and I would be running after him because I never had anything in writing and saying, I know I saw probably over 100 patients. You owe me this amount of money. It turned out he ended up owing me about $60,000 or $70,000, and I was able to get an attorney who was able to squeeze $12,000 out of him. Mm-hmm. But I learned a lesson about myself, which many people do learn across their lifespan. If it sounds too good to be true, it probably is.
Yes.
Because he never had the intention of paying me what work that I was doing. And I was too naive and too greedy. I mean, I had to learn about myself that I was greedy, because mm-hmm. I was going to be making much more than I would make by just legitimately seeing a patient in my practice, et cetera. It was a really good lesson for me. So it really is that balance of, making sure that we give enough to ourselves that we're mm-hmm. fulfilled, and also giving back. But when we get greedy, or we think that, I'm good and he thinks I'm good. And he knew how to seduce my ego too, because he was a great sociopath. So he went on to be indicted on 4 federal counts of fraud.
Wow.
Yeah. And I was almost going to have to testify in a grand jury, which scared the crap out of me. FBI talking to me and all this stuff, which I had nothing to do with the illegitimacy mm-hmm. of any of it. But it was scary.
Mm-hmm. I think you brought up a really good point. I don't know if you wanted to say something, Courtney, but the part about greed.
Yes.
So a big part of me is looking at where I am greedy and where I am entitled and where I think I'm owed something, and how that is a big motivation a lot of the time. And our culture promotes that.
Totally.
I get really kind of disgusted when I hear a lot of people going, I'm going to get mine, and on Facebook and social media, how they're like, this is what I want. I want to be a star. I want to be this. I want to be that. I mean, I can't change the culture, but the reality is that leads to more selfishness, more pride, more ego, more greed, and a lot of debt, actually. So at some point, these kids or these people that think that it's all about the bling and that's they're going to get theirs are going to have a spiritual lesson, and I want to be around to see it. I'm kidding. No, I kind of do. It's like part of me is like, I want to see that person kind of have a little come up-ins. But that's just my, my judgment. The reality is that when we're in that kind of greedy space, we make decisions that really are going to come back to bite us in the ass. And I love that you said you had to look at yourself and your greed.
Because
that's why I ended up in the situation I was with my film and with the house. It's because I'm going to get mine.
You had no stops,
yep.
right? And you didn't believe that there were going to be any stops. Mm-hmm. Yeah, I know.
But
it's
when I
tough
start
lessons.
I'm sorry. But
no,
when
please.
I start trusting that I am going to be taken care of, and I take actions that, like I create that safety net for myself with good actions, then I don't need to be in so much fear, which just causes me to make those decisions that are greedy. Mm-hmm. When I really trust that I've got there's something bigger that's guiding me and that I can make good decisions, I do. And I don't do it out of fear or greed.
Mm-hmm.
And
nice.
Life gets better.
Nice. Absolutely. Well, we have a couple minutes left. So what are some of the most important tidbits that we haven't covered yet today?
Oh, boy. I think what I just would want to say is if anybody is listening, you know, and they're struggling with debt, that there's a lot of help and a lot of hope out there, and finding a really good community. For me, it was a 12-step recovery group. But, you know, you can't go this alone. It's really difficult. And it's, you know, while I like to, I think that for me, humor is a way, was the way sort of out once I got through the hard part. I just have a weird sense of humor. And so I think that for me, that laughter is so critical to healing in all areas of my life. But the reality is that, people can get really stuck and scared, and there is hope out there. So I would just want to encourage people, you know, to research, look online for help if it's a problem, if they feel debting or even under earning, which is a really big problem. There are places you can go, but until we do this like work on how we look at our money as a relationship, it's not a dollar, it's an energy, it's a relationship, it's how I feel about myself and the world and what I do, and until I kind of can feel good about that, the money part is what I chase.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that's it. I hope it's of encouragement, you know, and inspiration if anybody's having a hard time to get some help.
Absolutely. And I think that too, sometimes just some practical steps can be really helpful. Mm-hmm. Like, I mean, they can be expensive, but there are people who will give away services like a free financial planning service or something like that, doing the legwork to get somebody who can just take an overview of your financial picture and give you some tips on whether or not, you know, you can cut back here or add this over here. Sometimes that's really money well spent because you have somebody who's objective. There's also some self-help books on how to organize your finances and, you know, based on your own preferences of things, how much you should spend versus how much you should save, what your financial goals are in the future. I think those can be really valuable tips as well. Now, do you own credit cards now?
You know what? I don't personally use them, but here's what I would say on the in the tools and tips thing. If you're in debt and you're paying rent or getting your basics on a credit card, it's really advisable that you stop immediately. And as far as the tools go, what I would say is to do everything you can to get a spending plan so that you know what you're spending and what's coming in a very clear way, even if you have to write it down on a piece of paper. And then also know what you spend every day so that if I spend $10 at Starbucks, it does add up. And I'm not one of those people that says stop drinking Starbucks so that you can like have a bigger IRA at the end of your life. This is just about being clear. There are many free apps like Mint.com or Mint so that you can get kind of things broken down to what you're spending every day. And again, free help, 12-step groups, you're going to learn a lot of tools and that will really help you a lot. If you're not into that, find a friend that you can just sit down and talk to and say, I've had to do that so many times just to learn QuickBooks and learn how to do Excel because it's just not a natural thing for me. The other thing is that don't make promises you can't keep. So if debtors or, you know, collectors are calling you and saying, can you pay this? And you know that you can't, don't say that you can if you can't. Do you know if you're not buying lunch so that you can pay for that car, then you need to say, you know, I've got to put a hold on this. And there are specific things you can do online. If your creditors are hassling you, you can send a cease and desist letter to please stop contacting me. It's a rich, there's so much here, but in general, just trying to not make big decisions and keep yourself grounded and clear about what you're earning, what you're bringing in, what you're spending is the first step.
And pull your head out of the sand or out of your butt.
Out of the something. Out of your something.
And surrounding yourself with like-minded people, I think, too. I mean, and I think that's where I've been so fortunate, you know, even in the trials and tribulations that I've had, you know, with money, putting a lot of money into a business, not really seeing anything back, having this sort of, okay, well, it's money, it comes and goes attitude. And surrounding myself with people who aren't judging me based on where I'm eating, what I'm wearing, can I take that trip or not, you know? And having those like-minded people who know that it's not about, you know, the riches or the materials and that it is just about the connections that we get to have with each other and supporting each other through you know, those experiences. I have friends who hang out with, you know, surround themselves with people who might be of a little more status than they are, and they would rather drive the Mercedes than keep the lights on in their house, you know?
And, yes, choices.
And it's sad, yeah.
Okay, we have to wrap up. Misty, where can people find you or the book?
They can find the book on Amazon. It is Forgive Us Our Debts, Please. Daily humor for debtors, compulsive spenders, and under-earners. And also, they can find me at Misty B. Writes. That's M-I-S-T-I-B. Writes.
W-R-I-T-E-S.
com. I just totally forgot how to spell Writes. So, and reach out to me, and you'll find content and resources there.
Awesome. And I need to thank Kim Gold again for being the sponsor of our show. And Kim's book is Gold Standard, available on Amazon.com. And all that information is also on our website, docandtherapist.com. So thank you so much for listening to us. Next week, we have a special treat. Our sponsor herself, Kim Gold, and her two sisters, they are triplets, are going to come on and share about what it was like to grow up as a three-pack. All right.
Three-pack.
I like that.
Courtney, thank you so much for being on the show.
Thank you so much for having me.
You're just a wonderful lady. I love you so much.
Thank you.
And Misty, you are awesome.
Thank you. Okay. Thank you for having me, Deborah.
Absolutely.
Okay. Thanks, Courtney.
Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
You're listening to the Dr. Deborah and Therapist Kelly Show, only on LA Talk Radio.